it's hard for a 5-year-old to keep up with a child born many months earlier. But most parents, one suspects, think that whatever disadvantage a younger child faces in kindergarten eventually goes away. But it doesn't. It's just like hockey. The small initial advantage that the child born in the early part of the year has over the child born at the end of the year persists. It locks children into patterns of achievement and underachievement, encouragement and discouragement that stretch on for years and years. Recently, two economists, Kelly Bedard and Elizabeth Dewey, decided to look at the relationship between scores on what's called TIMSS, the math and science test given every 4 years to children around the world, and month of birth. They found that among fourth graders, the oldest children score somewhere between 4 and 12 percentile points better than the youngest children. That, as Dewey explains, is a huge effect. It means that if you take two intellectually equivalent fourth graders with birthdays at opposite ends of the cutoff date, the older student could score in the 80th percentile, while the younger one could score in the 68th percentile. That's the difference between qualifying for a gifted program and not. It's just like sports, Dewey said. We do ability grouping early on in childhood. We have advanced reading groups and advanced math groups. So early on, if we look at young kids in kindergarten and first grade, the teachers are confusing maturity with ability. And they put the older kids in the advanced stream where they learn better skills. And the next year, because they're in the higher groups, they do even better. And the next year, the same thing happens, and they do even better again. The only country we don't see this going on is in Denmark. They have a national policy where they have no ability grouping until the age of 10. In other words, Denmark waits to make selection decisions until maturity differences by age have evened out. Dewey and Bedard subsequently did the same analysis, only this time looking at college. What did they find? At 4-year colleges in the United States, the highest stream of post-secondary education, students belonging to the relatively youngest group in their class are underrepresented by about 11.6%. That initial difference in maturity doesn't go away with time. It persists. And for thousands of students, that initial disadvantage is the difference between going to college and having a real shot at the middle class and not. I mean, it's ridiculous, Dewey says. Think for a moment about what the story of hockey and early birthdays tells us about success. It tells us that our notion that it is the best and the brightest who effortlessly rise to the top is much too simplistic. Yes, the hockey players who make it to the professional level are more talented than you or me. But they also got a big head start, an opportunity that they neither deserved nor earned. And that opportunity played a critical role in their success. The sociologist Robert Merton famously called this kind of phenomenon the Matthew effect, after the New Testament verse in the Gospel of Matthew, "For unto everyone that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance, but from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath." It is those who are successful who are most likely to be given the kinds of special opportunities that lead to further success. It's the rich who get the biggest tax breaks. It's the best students who get the best teaching and the most attention. And it's the biggest 9- and 10-year-olds who get the most coaching and practice. Success is the result of what sociologists like to call a cumulative advantage. The professional hockey player starts out a little bit better than his peers, and that little difference leads to an opportunity that makes that difference a bit bigger, and that edge in turn leads to another opportunity that makes the initially small difference bigger still, and on until the hockey player is a genuine outlier.